Our final speaker is Hamilton R. from Baltimore.
I'm an addict. My name is Hamilton. Our family. No one's told you today I love you. Very important to hear that. Can everybody hear me? Don't worry about it. I can talk without it, believe me. You know, it's really an honor and a privilege to share my experience, Strength and Hope Anywhere, and I'm really glad to be asked to come down here and share. I was listening to John share a couple minutes ago, and I haven't seen him in a long time, and he was bringing back some of the history of Narcotics Anonymous in this region. And I remember some of the days of the Mid-Atlantic region, when people used to travel those long distances. And I remember when meetings were so few. And as I drove here, I came here with one of my new sponsees, and it was quite a drive. But I remember we used to drive like this just to go to meetings, because there weren't that many meetings in NA. And I'm really glad to be here. Y'all have quite a turnout, and that's a good thing. That's a good thing. It's nice out here, too. I'm originally from Baltimore City. I was born and raised in Baltimore. I used any way I could. Didn't make a difference where I was with that. Didn't just, you know, have one spot. I had a couple spots I liked going to and using. And some of them are gone now. But nothing changes. I'll give you a little bit story about me. I'm not going to give you any real NA history. I'll give you my story, and I'll share my experience, strength, and hope. And if you can get a little history out of that, that's wonderful. If you don't, that's okay, too. Hopefully, you get a little message of hope, okay? I used every day of my life from the age of 12 till I was 25, something mind-altering, mood-changing. You know, the first time I picked up, I liked it. I didn't feel anymore, and I could act the way I wanted to act in my mind. All my little insecurities and fears went out the door. And, you know, you could always blame everything on being high. Wasn't that wonderful? You know, your actions, did I do that? Oh, man, you were fucked up. Well, that's good, you know. Or when somebody says, you know what you did last night? Man, I was fucked up, you know. But, you know, it was fun for a long time. You know, using was fun. It was fun. And something happened. You know, it wasn't fun anymore. And I wasn't feeling good about myself. And I lived to use and used to live. I hated myself. I hated y'all. I hated everything about it. And I didn't know what to do. I had been on every methadone program in Baltimore City back then. You know, I would go to methadone programs like you go to a corner. And I love methadone. Man, that was my drug of choice. You know, my family loved methadone. You know, I had gotten to the point where, you know, because of my actions through my active addiction, methadone was my medication. And when I was taking my medication, I was halfway stable. So it was like they would love to just give me rides to go get my medication, you know. I remember taking trips and going to, like, New Jersey, Cape May, and then driving to Atlantic City to get my medication every day because I couldn't get take-homes because I had dirty urine. Isn't that interesting? An addict with a dirty urine. I remember when my younger brother graduated from college in Atlanta, Georgia, I had to go and to a methadone program down there. So I'm still talking about disease of addiction, the ways and means to get more. Back then, I didn't know anybody who was living one day at a time without the use of nothing, total abstinence. I think one night I was up around 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. Isn't that unusual? And I was watching TV, and they talked about this program called the Double A's. And do you have a drinking problem? Call AA. We can help. I'm thinking, what the fuck? Now, I didn't have a drinking problem, but I drank every day. Only time was a problem is if I didn't have one. Right? You know, like when you get clean, the first thing, you know, all the newcomers say, well, I don't have a drinking problem, you know. I have a drug problem. I don't have a drinking problem. So when I heard the thing about the Double A's, you know, I was like, well, that's not for me. But I couldn't understand how a program could really help. So I remember, you know, I was walking around my job one day, And I said the three magical words that all of us have said before we got here. I said, God help me. And I'll never forget that day. I ended up in a mental institution. Now, when I got clean, they didn't have these nice little names of rehabs and all that shit. They were mental institutions. And I knew that I was going out there, and it was a program of total abstinence. And I was scared to death. Because, mind you, I hadn't gone one day without the use of something. I remember back then, right before I went in the hospital, I went and talked to a guy who ended up being in the fellowship today. He's been clean now 23 years. I remember therapeutic value, one addict helping another, even in using is there, right? I remember I went and talked to him before I went into this rehab, and I said, look, I'm thinking about going into this rehab and it's total abstinence. And I said, I'm scared to death. He says, well, you could look at it this way. He says, it should be able to help you. And I says, well, what do you mean? He says, if you go there and you're gone for 2 months, you can save enough money that you can have a big party when you come out. And that's all I was thinking, man. Yeah. You know? And he says, and the worst part is you can go there for 2 months and it could work. And you could maybe get clean. And I was thinking, oh, shit. You know? I remember when I went to this mental institution, they introduced us to a program called Narcotics Anonymous. And I went to my first NA meeting, and it was on Liberty Road. And I sat in the back on denial row, and it was a real small meeting. It was probably about 15 people there. And I remember I was thinking, man, these people are freaking crazy, man. Y'all were talking about how much y'all love one another, and I didn't use the day. I keep coming back. And when I got clean, we didn't have that much literature. We didn't have a basic text. You know, we had some of the readings. We had the little white book. But everybody said the same freaking thing. I feel good today. I didn't use. And all I know is that it works. And because nobody was, everybody's basically working the first step. You know, we surrendered. But we didn't really know about, you know, getting into the advanced steps, or if there's such a thing. And I don't know. I mean, I sat in there, and I was just thinking. So then they what they did was they passed the basket around. And I was like, okay, I'm watching the money now. Because I'm figuring every freaking body in here is so damn happy they're taking something, right? So I'm figuring that somebody is, like, taking the money and buying the happy pills.
Yeah, I love you. Good seeing you.
You know, so what happened was that then they did the key tags, and I was sitting there, and they did 30 days and 60 days and 90 days, and then they got to the glow-in-the-dark one-year key tag, and I said, man, I want one of those. And I'll never forget that all my life I've made promises and never fulfilled any of them. And I said to myself that day that I was going to get a one-year key tag. Not then. Take it easy. Because we have had those, haven't we? Anybody here new? Anybody here have a year? Then they want to share, you know, hi. Keep coming back, man. We love you. Yeah, okay. So anyway, I said I was going to get a one-year key tag. And, you know, that was the promise I made to myself. I guess I was kind of arrogant, but, you know how addicts are, man. We about it. We're survivors, man. We're intelligent people. We usually get what we want. How the hell do we make it this long? And then we can turn that negative energy that we use into positive energy. You know, I'm going to tell y'all some success stories. But I want to go back to something. First of all, I want to welcome you, man, because I saw you raise your hand. I want to welcome you to this NA meeting. And if this is your first one, beautiful. And I hope that you've heard something today, and that if you haven't, if we pissed you off, come on back because we pissed you off. You can come back and get it straight. Maybe you hear something that'll help you. What happened to me at my first meeting, I heard something to help me, and I did see the people that I really did like. So anybody else that's new here, keep coming back. I have a sponsor who lives right near the Bay Bridge, and he was at my first NA meeting. And he wasn't my sponsor then, but he is today, and he's been my sponsor for about the last 15 years. And this guy is very loving and caring. I've watched this guy go through a lot of shit, you know. And that's what it's about, because I'm a people person. I like watching y'all, you know. And my whole thing is, if you can do it, I can do it. And that's how I've been all my life. And that's how I was when I got clean. I said, if somebody can make a year, I can do that shit. You ain't that damn special, you know. So use me as an example, because I've used a lot of people as examples, and for the negative, you know, because we live and we learn. I can live through your bad experiences. So make a long story short, I wanted the one-year key tag. I went 365 days on first three steps, I can't, he can, so I let him. Honesty, open-minded, wellness, and the N.A. dances. Always. I keep you clean for a year, won't it? Man, I had a freaking ball, man. I was clean, started looking good. You know how we clean up good, too, don't we? Shit, people start saying, you know, your family, you look good. Yeah, I feel good. Shit. You know? We ain't feeling like shit, you know what I'm saying? I mean, just when you get clean, life gets better. Now, trust me, my head wants to kill me because my head's still telling me, yeah, you clean, but you still ain't shit. But that's okay because I go to meetings and hopefully I got a sponsor by then. I tell them, look, my head's telling me that I ain't shit. And my sponsor says, just don't worry about the head. Bring the body, you know, because our heads are out to kill us. So the whole thing is that I just kept coming around and had a good time. Now, N.A. was real small when I got clean. It was very small. We had about 8 meetings in the whole Baltimore, Washington area. We used to commute back and forth to all the meetings. I see the same freaking people every... Now, I know it's east of the Bay. Y'all probably don't have that many meetings over here. So what happens is every goddamn day you see the same people talking the same stupid shit with the same issues, you know. And you're sitting there going, won't they shut the fuck up and listen? They may start getting something. You know, but it's okay, because we're going to love you and hug you and be thinking, when are you going to get over this shit? But we don't say it, you know, because really we hope that they talk to their sponsor. The beauty is when we keep coming back, they will get through it. And then we watch them grow, and they celebrate and be thinking, damn, I remember a year ago they were going through all that bullshit drama. And now look at them. You know, we become like freaking parents and role models. You know, we start taking on responsibility. Start talking about crazy shit like getting married, buying homes, getting a job. Oh, no. Anyway, let's not push it. So anyway, I made it my first year. And my first year, you know, like your first year, it's funny because now, anniversaries was like every day is an anniversary for me. I'm grateful every day. The people at my job, they don't understand me, but they've only known me clean. I've been at my job 26 years. I've been clean 23 and a half years, one day at a time. When I started my job, I was a guy in the bathroom stall shooting dope. And now, you know, I got a freaking title there. I make million-dollar decisions. I'm well-respected, admired. I got a lot of people reporting to me. You know, this is what we do. I'm respected in our community. Giving back is the 12th step. This is what happens to us. Now, they can't. You know, like sometimes when I tell them, yeah, well, you know, they all know that I don't drink, I don't use, and that I'm in recovery because everybody's been touched now by addiction. But they can't imagine shit like, you used to shoot needles? I can't imagine that. Me neither. So anyway, my first year anniversary, and y'all all came and y'all lied to me, told me how wonderful I was, how much I changed, you know. Y'all know how it is the first year. You've grown a lot. You've helped me a lot. I just love you. I keep coming back. Oh, yeah. My family was there. I think back then, you know, it used to be the shock value. The more you could, like, shock people, the better I thought a speaker you were. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I shot this motherfucker in there. After that, it was 20 police, the squad team was out front, and they took me out. You know, people were like, man, he was a bad motherfucker. No, he was crazy, all right? He should be locked up now. But, so anyway, we don't need those kind of people around us. You know what? It used to be that I used to love so much drama, and I was telling Mike coming down, I don't like drama today. I like a nice, simple, quiet life. I don't like... Now, I do every once in a while when I hear about something, I do want to still hear about it. You know, and I'm still the kind of person that if all of a sudden I heard shots outside, I would probably run to the door. I should be hitting the ground, but that addict in me got to know, you know. Because y'all know, really, aren't we some sick-ass people? You know when you, like, if you hear, man, they freaked out at the meeting last night. You know, and John was talking about, they started arguing and cursing. I travel a lot, and I've gone to meetings all across the country in different countries. I go to meetings where they don't even speak English. And it's always the same. You can feel how people feel. You may not understand what they're saying. And it's funny because usually what happens is, and I'm going to tell y'all right now, if you go to a meeting and you hear somebody talking, don't always think that they're interrupting the meeting, because so many times now we go to meetings, they translate. Because we are a very diverse and international fellowship. So just remember that now. So we're sitting in a meeting in Las Vegas, me and my best friend, and the guy's sitting there in the meeting. And, you know, I knew some of the people there, and all of a sudden he said, you know what? I feel like just killing all y'all in the meeting. And I'm saying, okay, all right. So now the addict in me is like, where's the door? You know, all of a sudden you start looking around and shit like, you know, maybe this ain't safe and conducive to recovery, you know? So then he goes on about he's going to go and get his machine gun and kill everybody in the meeting. Now, apparently they knew this guy. So he shared for a couple minutes, and then one of the old-timers raised his hand, and he told him, he says, you know what? If you come around here again and you threaten us, you're not going to have to worry about coming to another NA meeting. And by the time the guy got finished sharing, the one who had threatened all of us was apologizing. I mean, this is how it works. Now, when we left that meeting and we saw some of our other friends and we told them about what happened, and I'm still a little bit shaken, they were thinking, shit, I wish I would have been at the meeting. We love excitement, right? Okay. So by the second year, I said, okay, I couldn't get y'all high like I did the first year because, you know, at your first anniversary, what can you talk about? You talk about 13 years of active addiction. Second year, I started talking about recovery, so I talked about doing my fourth step. You know, and I started talking about the process of change. You know, trusting and loving God that what's going to happen to me for the rest of my life is going to be okay. I found some very important things that I still live by today. Number one, I cannot change anything that has happened in my life or yours already. Okay? And that's the bottom line. So I better get some level of acceptance. Do I like what you do? Did I like what I did? Probably not. Can I change it? No. Can I become a different person? I would hope so. Okay? I know in my life that I've changed. So what makes me think that you can't change? You know? And I know that we can get caught up in holding on to shit that people have done in recovery in the past. You know, and it's hard, but I got to let go. You know, and that's the bottom line. I don't get all caught up in what people did yesterday or even this morning. You know, it's about what you are and what you're doing today. And that's so important. If I don't, I'm going to lose. You know, I'm going to lose. If I get caught up in the judging people, you know, assuming, I tell you one thing, I will not anymore just look at somebody and think I know who they are or what they do, because y'all have fooled me too many times. You know, you can't just tell about who somebody is by just looking at them. And I'm going to tell you, there's all these crazy sayings around here. The person who you don't like is going to be the one who helps you. You know, and women can really get into that, because women, you know, they get real mad at each other, and the next thing you know, they ain't talking, and the next thing you know, something may happen, and the one that they don't even want to talk to is the one hugging them and sharing with them their experience, strength, and hope. Another thing that I do know for sure is that we come from many and varied backgrounds. And all of us don't come from, you know, like real healthy paths. We don't have healthy families. There could have been abuse that we've had in the past. There could have been obsessiveness. It could have been rape. We could have been child abuse. You know, so I know all these things. And these things are things that we need to, on our own, heal inside. So how do we do that? We do that through the process, the steps, and trust in another human being. You know, I'm not saying that you got to come into a meeting and share what's going on with you. I don't think the meetings are for that. They're for experience, strength, and hope. I believe sponsorship is. Got to find somebody you trust and let them know where you are. You know, and I think it's so important. I have a support group in my life of guys that I trust with everything. They know everything about me. You know, but it's not that many guys. A couple of them are my sponsor, and one of them is my sponsor. But as time has gone on, that's just the way it is. That's how it's falling out, you know. And I have fun, and I love these guys. You know, I eat lunch with one of them every day. You know, one of them is a best friend of mine. He works at my job, too. I sponsor him. He knows probably more about me than I know about myself. You know how that is. If you're married in a relationship, usually the person that you're in a relationship with knows you better than you know yourself, and they still love you. That shows you how fucked up we are. I ain't gonna say show you how fucked up they are. But that's what happens in love. You know, think about it. If you're in a relationship, the person who's in that relationship with you, they know you. They read you like a freaking book. You can't even lie to them. They know when you're lying. They know when shit's going on with you. And you think you're fucking fool. That's how sick we are. We think we're fooling somebody. But they love us despite. That's powerful. That's powerful. All right. So let me tell y'all a little bit about being in Narcotics Anonymous. Let's see. I have a son that's in college right now. He's only known me clean. Man, I tell y'all, just stay around here. When I got clean, I had a lot of hair on my head. I was thinner. Now I got arthritis. A lot more shit. Let me tell you. I used to like talk to a lot of women in the fellowship. That's real convenient, right? We have the most beautiful women in the world. My sexuality is heterosexual, so we can get that straight right now. I like women. I don't care what, if you're homosexual, asexual, any sexual, whatever. We don't give a damn. And I tell you, it's interesting because Mike and I rode down here. One of my grand sponsees died, and this guy was well liked by so many people in the world. And had a memorial service for him on Thursday. And he was gay. His sexuality was gay. But this guy, his heart was incredible, you know, and he meant so much to me and so many people around him. And I went to his viewing on Wednesday, and I'm sitting in the viewing, and beside me is a transsexual. And this, y'all know transsexuals, right? I ain't talking about a drag queen, I'm talking about transsexual. This girl was beautiful. This girl's a man. Y'all understand? But this is what my growth is and the fellowship, because it didn't make a difference to me what this person is. Because I've known this person for 10 years, and we started talking about her sponsor, who was also transsexual. Her sponsor lived in D.C. and used to speak all around the world. And we were just talking about, you know, it's about really what's going on right here, you know. The funny thing is about her sponsor did the main meeting in Lofton, Nevada about 7 years ago. Her sponsor's dead now. And her sponsor used to share conventions, and she used to give the shock value, talk about when she used to be a man, but now she's a woman. She was good looking, too. But she would carry a serious message. So she had spoken Lofton, but it seems like as we kind of mature with our recovery, we don't come with the shock value stuff anymore. You know, we just share experience, strength, and hope. So I don't think she shared about she used to be a man. So she's sharing the main meeting. So she had a layover in Las Vegas, and one of my boys called me from Las Vegas with excitement in his voice, right? And he tells me, man, you know, Tina from D.C. shared out here at Lofton, and she kicked it. I was like, all right. She dropped the message. I was like, beautiful. You know, and I'm thinking, okay. So he heard a really great message from the heart. So then he goes, and she had a layover on Sunday, and she couldn't get back to the East Coast. I'm like, beautiful. He says, we hung out together. He says, man, is she seeing anybody? I said, did you listen to Tina share? And he said, man, she has a hell of a message. And I said, beautiful. And I said, I don't know. I don't know. And I couldn't tell him that Tina was a man. Because you never know what's going to make somebody huge. So the funny part is, at my grand sponsee's wake, I was sitting there talking to Tina sponsee and telling her the story, and she was just laughing. She says, you probably didn't know. I said, I don't think she did either. So anyway, so I got all the press because I was in one of my relationships about 15 years ago, and one of y'all had kicked me to the curb, you know, even though I didn't want to be with her for the rest of my life, but before I could tell her I didn't want to see her no more, she told me. So I'm fucked up. I don't know how it is, right? You don't want to be with them, but they say, I don't want to see no more. You'd be like, well, wait a minute, hold it, you know. And I never was good at telling somebody how I really felt, you know. I mean, I've matured into that, but I would rather pick an argument with you and make you get mad at me. And then you say, well, I don't see you no more. Well, I don't see you no more. And then it's over, and I'm like, phew, got out of that. Instead of having to be honest and tell them that, look, I'm not feeling this way about you, but I do care about you, and you need to have somebody special in life, and I'm not, you know, the kind of things that adults would probably do. I never was good at that. So this girl kicked me to the curb. I'm all sad. So my sponsor says, come on down. to my home group. His home group is over here on Friday night at the hospital in Annapolis. So I came down. I'm sitting in the meeting with him. Now, I'm supposed to be depressed. You know, I'm sad. I'm spending a little time with my sponsor. He's like got his arm around me and shit, you know. You can usually tell when the men are going through shit, you know, the man sitting there with his arm around his sponsor, you know. I'm not crying or nothing, but he's nurturing me, you know. So all of a sudden, I see this young lady who's beautiful sitting in the back of the meeting, and she's freaking talking during the meeting, and she wasn't translating, all right? So I'm like, that should have been the warning sign, but it was okay. So then I asked my sponsor who she was. He told me, he said, don't you remember her? And I walked up to her, we exchanged phone numbers. Make a long story short, we end up getting married. She's my ex-wife now. We're still best friends. No, it's okay. It's okay because, you know, I'm going to tell you, through all my living experiences, I've learned something. And in that marriage, I made a lot of poor choices in that marriage. Ones that I will not make again. And I hurt her. And by hurting her, I ended up losing a wonderful marriage with this lady. But I want to explain a couple of things to you. So anyway, I started talking to her. We started dating. And we were together for a while. We would go to conventions all around the world. I used to speak at a lot of conventions, and I don't anymore, but I still go to conventions all around. And I just love going. I see people that I know. If you're NNA, you just go, you hang out with your friends, we go out and eat, we laugh. I have so much fun in the fellowship. Even if it's not a convention and I go to meetings and I don't know people, I mean, all you got to do is just show up. You show up, you tell people, look, I'm from such and such. I don't know anybody here. They take you, go eat somewhere. They show up. I travel, and sometimes people are in the fellowship, they're like, how do you know all these places? And how do you know these people? And all, I'm just like, well, I don't tell them that it's a fellowship of dope fiends and thieves and murderers, but I just tell them it's a people. Because they actually you can use, hot dogs now are 25 cents. So anyway, my ex-wife and I, we were up in Toronto, and we were coming back from Toronto, and she was complaining about being tired constantly. So what happens is, I said, why don't you go ahead, and she's going to get an anemic test. And at that time, she got tested for HIV when she first got clean. Me, I was getting tested all the time for HIV because of my behavior. You know, sometimes I practiced safe sex, sometimes I wouldn't. You know, like, the hell is that? And then sometimes I would, sometimes I wouldn't, and I get tested, and I'm clean, I'm okay, blah, 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 blah. So when we first started dating, she had gotten tested when she first got clean, and it was negative. So she was like, she said she was tired. Now she's coming up on like two, three years. No, she's been clean maybe 4 years. And we've been back and forth on our relationship. She went and got tested. The worst day of my life is she called me. She says, I'm HIV positive. I was like, oh, shit. You know, it's funny because the way God works is that his time, not ours. I remember that one of our best friends is HIV positive, living with, from Philadelphia. And this guy, he's still alive. He was just one of the happiest, go lucky kind of guys. And we all knew he was positive. And I remember my ex-wife said, you know, if I found out I was positive, I don't think I could stay clean. And I said, well, you never know what God has in store for you, which we don't. But what happened was God had put this person into her life so that by the time that she did find out she was positive, we had people in our lives that were already living with HIV and staying clean. So it was not an option for her to use. You know, she had a network of people that she can call. I started thinking right away, you know how back to this, that's out to kill us. I'm driving home. I'm thinking, shit, if she's positive, I'm positive. Okay. Then I started thinking, I gave it to her. Oh, man. And, that, you know, it's like, but this wasn't about me. It was about her. So I went home, spent time with her. I'm going to tell you that this lady didn't use, you know, and today she's still doing good. And she shares about being positive, and a lot of people know her, so it's not like I'm breaking her anonymity or something. I ended up that I'm negative. And how does that happen? If you know anything about HIV, it's easier for a man to give it to a woman than a woman to give it to a man. And we can go into that at another time. But we didn't practice safe sex for most of our relationship before we found out she was positive. After we found out she was positive, we practiced safe sex. it ended up happening was we ended up getting married, and it was one of the best things that ever happened to me. This woman is a dynamite individual. But, you know, I'm so caught up in the, you know, always looking on the outside to make myself feel better. You know, the typical man, minimize my feelings, look good, you know, validating who I am by who I'm sleeping with, not dealing with myself. You know, I'm gonna, you know, I know women know it, but men are fucked up. You know, all we are is little insecure kids that run around thinking we, you know, and we get little toys and shit. We love our cars and our bikes and our computers and our freaking Nintendo games and, you know. And then if we get a little cough, take care of me, mommy, you know. But women are like strong and they deal with us. They deal with all our stupid shit, you know, and blah, blah, blah. But us men are like, until we really start dealing with what's going on with us. And what happens is we get a network, we get a sponsorship chain, we start talking about really what's going on in our feelings, which takes a long time. Luckily, I have a sponsor that's very honest about his feelings. He's in touch with us. So I share with him. I trust my sponsor. And most of the guys I'm around have time. I'm not around. You know, as time goes on, I can't really sponsor somebody who's a newcomer. Now, take it easy. If somebody asks me, I will say yes. I've never said no to anybody. But I believe that a newcomer needs time. And they need, you know, they need to, like, talk to somebody, like, every day, go to a meeting every day. And I don't have that time in my life anymore, so it's not fair to them, you know, and I'm just being honest. Most of the time what happens to me now, the guys that I sponsor, they have like 10, 15 years, and they've gone on to the point where they're like, okay, I'm not going to say it's advanced, but it's just different. Does that make sense? They don't have to hit me up every night talking about what's going on with them, because they're probably talking to their sponsees. They have a support group too, but we do share experience, strength, and hope, okay? So, after this experience, you know, what I did was I had a relationship outside of my marriage, which is called an affair. Got caught, naturally, you know. We ever not get caught. And she was devastated. What happens is three people get hurt. The other girl, me, and my wife. And the trust is broken. All relationships, any kind of relationships, are built on honesty and trust. And once that honesty and trust was broken, it was hard for her to feel it anymore because she was so hurt. We stayed friends, and we ended up breaking up, and now we're still friends today. So what have I learned from that? I've learned that, number one, I don't like hurting people, and it's not always about me, you know, and I can still get caught up in the me, 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 you know, and that shit is hard. And then you can even tell how you focus on, do you have good listening skills? Do you cut people off when they're sharing? You know, because your thought is so important. And, you know, learning about myself and about how fucked up I am, it's an awakening. You know, and it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of prayer. It takes a lot of... I'm going to tell you, I deal with people at my job on a constant basis. And if I shame somebody, because, you know, I can get upset. Like the other day, I got upset at one of the people who reports to me. And I ended up raising my voice. I felt terrible. You know, and I apologized to him before and he was wrong. He told me that he decided on what the priorities were most important. And I very rarely deal with this guy, but he reports directly to me. I mean, it's not like a dotted line. I set his priorities, but I never come to anybody like, okay, you need to do this, you need to do that. But when he said that, he freaking pissed me off because I sent him an email and I asked him to do something the day before, and the next day he hadn't done it, and I just pinged him like, hey, did you look at that? He said, I didn't even look at the email. Man, I was fucked up, man. I was like, what do you mean you ain't look at the email? He was like, well, it wasn't in my queue, and I didn't think it was that important. He decided, I'm like, so we had to come to my office. He raised his voice. I raised my voice. When he left the office, he understood what's important, okay? But I felt terrible because I raised my voice. Does that make sense? Because I don't, and the guy's a great employee. So, you know, like I had to tell him that I was sorry for raising my voice. I don't like feeling that way. And then I need him because I believe in a team effort. I believe that, you know, we're all in this together. It's not the I am or the great. What makes my group so good is the team effort. I've learned that from here in Narcotics Anonymous. They say practice principles in all of our affairs. You know, when I first got clean, we used to hug each other and we tell each other we love them. And that's what I did. I go home, I hug my parents. I hug my brother. They're not in the fellowship. You know, and I tell them every day I love them. And we still do this now after 20-some years. You know, my family's real close. If you want to know about Narcotics Anonymous, ask my family, ask the people around me. They can tell you what it's like. If people want to know about Narcotics Anonymous in your life, just ask them. You know, you got to practice these principles in all your fasts. That means that you practice with your kids, which is hard, patience and tolerance. You know, my son is me. My son is not an addict who uses. He doesn't use drugs. He probably never will, but he's an addict. Okay? And he's just like me. His standard answer is, I know. If you got a kid and you say something to him, the first thing they'll, I know. Or I was going to. Or the biggest one is, I forgot. Man, oh man. And my father just says, that's you. Okay. So anyway, I'll start bringing this because y'all been here a long time. Plus, it's humid in here, is it me? So where am I at today? Because of the HIV thing, I've got into service as far as trying to help with some kind of, I'm not going to say cure, but I got into a vaccine trial network. With my ex-wife being HIV positive, me being negative, there's trials going on now for people that are high risk. And I one day I'm driving to work and it was like, do you have a partner who was HIV positive, like to be an experimental trial for people that HIV negative? I was like, oh, fine. So Johns Hopkins, I call him up, I qualified, I start doing this. So I'm going there and they say, you know, we're looking for somebody who can go to D.C. to represent Hopkins at the community advisory board there. I was like, okay. Because, you know, we can talk. One thing addicts know how to do, we know how to talk, don't we? We don't know how to listen, but we know how to talk. So, you know, we're good talkers. So I went over to D.C. So the next day, you know, I start sitting on these committees over at the NIH. And I've been doing that now for about the last 12 years. Okay, and I sit on a committee with the top researchers in the world for vaccine trials for HIV. And we have trials going on all around the world, in Africa, Brazil, Europe, Thailand, China. And I sit there with the top doctors whose names are constantly in the newspaper, and I know these people by first name. And I would like to think that they respect me. Now, remember now, I'm the dope fiend who used to stick the needle in his arm. And I'm sitting at the table with them now, giving my advice, because I represent the community. Since then, I've been nominated, and I sit on the Commission of AIDS for Baltimore City. You know, remember now, I'm the dope fiend who used to stick the needle in his arm. Now I sit there at the table with all the leaders for the Department of Health and blah, blah, blah. You know, and this is what happens to us. You know, when we start getting back into the community, we start giving, people start looking at us and they respect us. You know, someone asked me, Chair, meeting, I'm back in school, freaking 49 years old. My son's in college right now. Now I'm back in college. You know, I remember I told y'all when I got my one-year key tag, I said I never completed anything. I've been in four universities. You know, I always would start, never finish. Well, I'm going to finish probably, I know within a year, but I'm hoping by December. Finally going to get my goddamn degree. Now, am I doing it for me? Yes. Am I doing it for my job? Definitely. Because I want to advance. Now I start getting ideas that I could probably, well, I'm not going to make the president. I work for a major corporation, defense. I have security clearances and that weird. You know, it's funny. As long as you're honest, they like that. It's when you lie and deceive when you get security clearances. Like when the questionnaire says, have you ever used drugs and which ones? I said, yes, all of them. Have you ever sold drugs? Yes, all of them. They said, why? I said, because I'm an addict. And they interviewed me, right? And they didn't even ask me about none of that shit. Now, they did see that I got clean in 81, and that I've been clean ever since. But it was like they knew. You know what I'm saying? Anything about us is an open book. Plus, they go around talking to people, too. You know, you ask a couple questions. Some people, I didn't even know he used drugs, you know? I don't. So anyway, so I'm back in school, and life has been good. So now let me bring it home. So I'm at a convention this year with my boys over in San Diego, the Southern Cal Convention. And we're there, and you know, I'm having a good time as usual. Man, I love this fellowship. I never laugh so hard. I mean, y'all know how it is. You know, you get with your friends, man, we just get so crazy, and we talk about shit, we talk about stories, and we're laughing so hard. And people are looking at us because we're all diverse. You know, here's a guy who's black, he's young, he's old, he's oriental, he's a drag queen. What the fuck's going on? They hugging each other, talking about I love you, you know. But they ain't drinking, you know. Y'all know how we are. When we crash in the restaurant, everybody's looking at us like, well, what's up with these people? And we're like, and they looking, but they can feel it, you know. We got our kids running around. Why are the kids there with them, you know? But they don't see the alcohol. They're trying, what's going on? But, now, you know, they kind of figure something's going on here. You know, here's a redneck, here's a black guy, you know. I remember when I first got clean, the fellowship was so small. We went over to my old sponsor's house. And back then, thank you. Back then, it was like still rock music, right? Now, I used to be a hippie when I used to use. I really like Pink Floyd. You know, when I saw my friends, I saw Pink Floyd, Jimi Hendrix, Rolling Stones. They'd be like, what the fuck? And so when I got clean, I was over at my sponsor's house, and he said, I'm having a party. Now, I think party means dance, okay? And I walked over there at Christmas time. They were playing On Butterfly in the Gala La Vida. This is my first year clean. I'm thinking, these motherfuckers are clean. In a Gala La Vida. I'm like, what the fuck? Laying around, only thing was missing was the drug. We don't do that anymore. Now we love to eat. Don't we love to eat? Good God Almighty. Party means food. All right, so anyway, and not hot dogs. And you know what? I've gotten a freaking phobic since I've gotten older, too, man. I'm all about washing my hands all the time and shit. And I'm, you know, like, I used to, like, pick the cooker up in the bathroom after it would spill over and use the toilet water. Now I won't even touch the goddamn handle in the bathroom. Y'all know how my friends told me they saw the Howard Hughes movie. They start moving. They start thinking about me, man. I'm like, you know, and when we go out to eat, my thing is, my sponsor celebrated 17 years, and he says, if it's one thing I learned from my sponsors, wash your hands before you eat. Because we used to go all the time, and you know how we'd be out hanging out, and then we'd go sit down at the table, and I'd be like, aren't you going to go wash your hands? And I said, you better not even think about passing that bread to me until you done washed your hands. So they know that's one of my pet peeves. So anyway, so I'm in San Diego, and I see this beautiful chick, and I walk up to her, and I start talking to her. And when she smiled at me, years ago, when I was younger, if a woman smiled, I just knew she was smiling at me. That was my ego self-centered. Now I'm like getting bald. I got a gut. I'm not as young. I'm not the player I used to be. You know what I mean? I used to have it going on, but now you younger guys, y'all carrying the flame. You can have all the drama. Good for y'all. But when she smiled at me, I just didn't. I looked around. Like, is she smiling at me? Like, you know, I'm all stupid and shit. And I started talking to this lady, and she had all the qualities I was looking for. Now, I remember I used to tell my sponsor, he used to say, what kind of woman are you looking for? I used to say, one that's honest, open-minded, willing, sincere, giving, great heart, nurturing, compassionate. And he said to me one day, he said, let me ask you a question. I said, yeah. He says, why would that woman want you? And I said, okay. He says, well, the only way you're going to get that kind of woman is you're going to have to be that kind of man. And I used to say, oh, shit, we're talking step work, aren't we? I'll talk to you later. But it always stuck in me. And I knew the only way I was going to attract that kind of person was to try to be that kind of person. So I met that kind of person. And when I met her, it scared me right away. But I knew on our second date that this was the woman I probably wanted to spend the rest of my life with. Okay. So what happened, make a long story short, I start talking to this lady. She lived on the West Coast. And I have a son in college. I'm 49 years old. She's 31 years old, and she was talking about maybe having a child. And I'm thinking, right now at my age, I'm trying to get my son through college, and then I could feel like I've arrived. I could buy the car that I've always wanted. I could live where I've always wanted. Like, I own my house, I own my car, but there's some things that after you work 26 freaking years at your job and you pay all your dues, that there's some things. So I get the son through college, I'm like thinking, yes. Well, guess what? I'm going to be a father. That's what I said to you. At the end of July, I'm getting married, you know. I'm excited, okay? But It was, but when I found out she was pregnant, I said, oh, Lord. Now, actually, it's a good thing because now I'm just preparing myself for it and I'm excited about it. And that's where I'm in my life today. And it's something new. I don't want to hear any freaking, if you see me and my son, I don't want anybody wanting my son going, is that Poppy? I don't want to hear no grandfather jokes, all right? Because one of my boys, Wilbur, who lives in Puerto Rico, he's 55 now, and he had his son when he was 49. And Wilbur was sitting in a restaurant. We were sitting there eating, and I swear Wilbur looked like he was his son's grandfather. And we were sitting there talking. He goes, you know, Ham, he says, the only thing about it, sometimes people say, so who's that, your grandson? And every time I want to get mad. And I started thinking, you know, see, back to my head again. I started thinking, oh, man, I'm going to put it with that shit, you know. So life is good for me. It's real simple. I don't know, y'all. Just live. If that's the message that I can give to all of y'all, live your lives. Be who you are. Enjoy life. Please enjoy life. If you get depressed and this is out to get you, let somebody know. Don't let it stay right here. You don't have to carry it anymore. Together we can. I love all of y'all, and thanks for letting me share.